be blessed by the divine. Today is a special day. I have Professor Jayanti with me, who is going to once again, like many people in the past, shoot a whole lot of doubts and questions and have a wonderful, fruitful discussion. Is my guest and is my hope. And I welcome her for this show. Welcome to the show, Professor Jayanti.
Varika Valamudan, be blessed by the divine. I am Jayanti Chamudisran from Chennai. I have been in Sky Yoga for 4 years. I am an assistant professor and have completed MCOM BA and MSc Yoga. My husband also an assistant professor. I have 2 children. I have 2 daughters. One of my daughter is a Brahmanyani, and we have Sky Yoga Center too. So be blessed by the divine.
All right. So Okay. Welcome to the show. Nobody will believe that you have a grown-up daughter who is a Brahmanyani. But anyways, Okay. That's a testament to, that's a testimony to the magic of the Sky Yoga system. Wonderful. So please start your questions.
Let us discuss about the harmony in family life. How one could maintain harmony in family? First question.
I live in a joint family, man. My family is a pretty large family. I have my father, my mother also used to live with us. Now, of course, she's no more. I have my mother-in-law, father-in-law, my wife and I, of course, are there. And my son, my daughter-in-law, my daughter, first daughter, second daughter, and both sons-in-law, and my grandson. My both daughters live in a separate house, but practically for most of the time, we would love to have them with us, and they live with us. At any point of time, we are about 9 people, 10 people in the house. So it could go up a little more because the grandson of ours is only about 1 year old, and there is a babysitter who comes to take care of him. So when she is also there, and now because of COVID, there is no housemaid. By the way, there is also a housemaid in the house. So it's a beautiful setup. It's a setup where you learn a lot about living together with other living beings, other human beings in this world. So I have learned a few techniques from my wife, I should say. I'm not ashamed to say this because she is a lot wiser and a more intelligent person than I am. I learned a few things. First, it's a small house with just about 3, 3.5 bedrooms. One could say 4 bedrooms. But we are, as you can see, we are essentially 5, 6 different families living together in just 4-bedroom house. So we don't have a bedroom ourselves. First thing my wife did was to tell other people that each of you take one bedroom and Murli and I will sleep in the hall. So we are used to sleeping on the floor. So that starts with that. Starts with putting the priority of other people's interest, other people's desires, and other people's needs ahead of yours. That takes a strength of mind, you see. It doesn't come that often for people who are weak in their mind, who have unfulfilled desires in their mind, and they are so focused on fulfilling these desires. This level of putting other people's priority ahead of yours doesn't come that very easily. So the first thing that I learned from my wife is put other people's needs ahead of yours when you are living in a joint family like ours. Second is, the youngest person in the family is 1 year old, my grandson. And you know how a small child is. Okay? This fellow is demanding sometimes, extremely sweet other times. He is an extremely well-behaved boy, no doubt about it. But a child is a child, okay? So even if he does not cry for attention, we love to shower him with our affection. He's the first grandchild of the family. So you can imagine how much of attention he will grab from all of us and we will give to him. The oldest person in the family is my father. And my father-in-law is also almost equally old than my father. They are about 86, 87 years old. So 86-year-old man in the house and a 1-year-old child in the house. So to be able to adjust with the behaviors of other people and work in their time zones and schedules. The grandson fellow may demand you to give him attention late in the night. But my father or my father-in-law especially may want to wake up early in the morning and do his meditation and his exercises, his sahasranamam and his methods of working or methods of worshipping or methods of living. So we have to adjust to both extremes. And my son, being a naturopathy doctor, works with his patients till pretty late into the night. So we sleeping in the hall, there'll be lights on, people walking up and down, people stomping around, making noise. And you still have to go to sleep because you need about 6-7 hours of sleep. So it requires a lot of adjustment in a situation like this. You just can't throw your anger at people, tantrum at people. You need to accept that if you have the right to sleep, other people have the right to make noise. If you have the right to meditate, other people have the right to make noise. If you have the right to work at odd hours, other people have the right to sleep at odd hours. So you need to adjust with other people. So lesson number two that I learned from my wife, it comes naturally for her. I have to put some effort to accept this. And sometimes I do not accept it and there are some conflicts in the house. And the third thing is, conflicts are quite natural in a joint family. When you put two people together, there'll be politics. So in my house, there is all kinds of energy flow from left to right, up and down in all directions. You can imagine how it will be, right? And in a conflict situation, you have to be fair and just. This, I have no idea how my wife does it, but she is super good in judging correctly, in fairness of all parties involved, what is correct in order to maintain peace within the family. The fourth driving factor is, it's like the dress that you choose. I wore this shirt today because I chose it. I woke up in the morning, I looked at the number of shirts that I had, and I decided I will wear this shirt. Likewise, my wife wakes up every morning and goes to bed every night, choosing peace over confrontation. It's an attitude. It's not a destination. You see, it's not something that you arrive after many years of working on it. No. It is a choice. It's a path. You choose every day. You wake up in the morning and say, I am going to be peaceful today and I'm going to maintain peace within the family. This is tapas. You know, it is meditation. Being peaceful is a state of mind that you arrive at. And I think I give a lot of credit for my wife for achieving this. And I think these would be the top four things that would that has helped my wife, and from her I have learned, and that has helped me in maintaining peace within this large joint family. And I love this family. I adore it. It's great in spite of all the pains and miseries and difficulties that I cause for other people and how they tolerate what I'm doing and how we have to adjust to other people's requirements. I would not trade this for, you know, billions of riches that anybody would ever give me. This is the greatest richness I have received in my life. I hope I've answered your question.
Thank you, sir. So interesting, but first question. Okay. How to avoid ego?
You should. Actually, I'm feeling that this would have been much better if my wife had answered all these questions. It is difficult. It is not easy to avoid ego. But it is not impossible to get rid of ego. First thing that you should accept in your mind, that I accept in my mind, is I'm human, yeah. I will make mistakes, yeah. I will shout at some people, or I will snap at some people, or I will harshly speak on certain things sometimes, or I will have very high expectations and that could disappoint either me or others. They'll create conflicts. So conflicts in a joint family like this, or in any relationship, is quite normal, and you could be the cause of it. So first, admit that you have made an error. But that does not mean that you are a sinner and that you are a guilty party and that you should be punished. So step number two, which has always helped me, is to go and say sorry in front of everyone, whether it is my child or whether it is my father or whether now, of course, the little fellow is just 1 year old. He probably doesn't understand the words like sorry. He right now understands only tata, bye-bye. You know, he understands a few other things like milk and hunger and water and things like that. But I have no problem in going and saying sorry to people, because that sets an example for other people to admit that, hey, here is a human being and he can make mistakes. And they are also human beings. They can make mistakes. And they should feel free to come and point out to me or tell me sorry or explain themselves to me. So there should be freedom in a space like this family, which allows our individual qualities to shine, but not let our ego rub each other. Because if it comes in between, the family will disintegrate. So ego-less state is once again a choice that you make. The third thing that you make is you sincerely try and not make the same mistake again. No guarantees. You could fail. You could make the same mistake again. But you should follow the same process. Go say sorry and compensate. Be nice to them. And look for things that would remove your ego. For instance, I wash vessels in my house. I clean. I sweep the floor. I mop the floor. I wash the toilets. And many times I've washed vessels and clothes when the machines are not available. Of course, we don't have a cloth washing machine. We don't have a vessel washing machine, a dishwashing machine. So we don't have a maid. In the last 5 months, we have not had a maid because of this COVID-19 problem. We have elders in our family. So there's a fear that somebody else comes from outside can bring virus into the family, and therefore we have stopped that. So every, for now, for instance, as soon as I finish this show, my duty is to clean the house. So I have come to the house and I'm doing this show today. Otherwise, I would be sitting normally in the center to do the show. So it helps. It helps to get rid of my ego. It helps me to realize that there is nothing that differentiates me from other people. If I expect my wife to sweep the floor, mop the floor, and clean the toilet, I should also be expected to do the same. There is nothing that differentiates me from her. I'm not superior to her. It's not like I should only do certain things because I'm a man. That's a stupid concept that we have in many family and the two Tamil Brahmin families where I come from. There's a general perception that men are superior to women. So not in my family. In my family, all of us are equal. Everybody does. My father does work sometimes. He cleans up the house. He's 86 years old. My daughters do the work. My son does the work. And my father-in-law will do the work. My mother-in-law will do the work. Everybody is equal. Whoever is willing to do, let them do that day. That's it. So because of this, even though we have a fairly large family, we have 4 bedrooms and slightly large-ish house, we are able to sustain ourselves by doing our own household work ourselves. So it's useful. It's useful to get rid of ego by just challenging yourself to do what appears to be a menial job. I do that all the time because it helps me to stay grounded. So all of this I've learned from my wife. Credit to her.
Thank you, sir. Next question. Why peace is important for kids?
Peace is important for every human being. Why should not be important for kids? It is important for kids. Simple. There is goodness in each human being. There is goodness inside a child too. From the time we were born, we are merely programmed in our subconscious mind to allow the goodness to develop in us. As soon as we are born, we have to breathe. Breathing causes pain in our lungs, which is why we cry. Babies cry because they're the first time they're breathing and the pain is making them cry. We were not laughing when we were born. We were crying when we were born. But we learn to smile. We learn to laugh. We learn to be happy. How did we learn to be happy? Because it is inherently programmed in our subconscious mind. And even a child knows that happiness is not in the toys. Happiness is not in the gifts that they receive. Those are conditioned behaviors when the children grow. The child does not want a gift father gives, but the child needs the father. The child needs the mother. And it gives them a sense of security. It gives them a sense of belongingness. It gives them the sense of identity. It gives them a sense of peace. So peace is a programmed part of the psyche of every human being who is born. And therefore, it is natural for children to seek peace. But they get distracted by so many things externally which stimulate their sensory organs, and they think there is happiness in these kind of sensory behaviors. And they get lost in that sensual life and sensual world and in the dream world, which sometimes helps them. But at some point of time, when they grow a little older, maybe 12 years upwards, 13, 14, 15, they need systematic practice that gives them simple tools such as our meditation, introspection exercises, kayakalpa yoga, that keeps them in touch with their inner peace and allows them a chance to develop the peace and goodness inside them to become a better, healthier, peaceful, non-hurting human being in the world.
Okay, thank you, sir. Wonderful answer. Next question. Husband and wife friendship is essential for peace. How?
I understand your question. Good question. Some years ago, several years ago, in fact, I had a fight with my wife. Natural. You live with another human being, there is bound to be some expectation mismatch. And I decided to walk out of the house because I felt that if I just stay away, there will be peace in the family and everything can come back. But my children got so upset with the whole process. I could see vividly in front of me, and I could see so clearly in their eyes that nothing else mattered for them in that moment except peace between me and my wife. They wanted a peaceful set of parents. They wanted peace between their father, their mother. And they told me so categorically in no uncertain terms. They said, look, you are great by yourself. Amma is great by herself. But there are these couple of things where the two of you are not really in sync with each other. We would like you to discuss and we would like you to sort it out. Okay. And it took us some effort to sort out that issue, and that situation has not occurred for many years now. So for that, I'm very grateful for my wife for not remembering this incident and not carrying a grudge against me, and that I walked out of the house for a few hours and maybe a couple of days and came back. I saw, clearly I understood at that point of time, children demand peace within the parents. Their self-esteem, their self-confidence, their self-worth derives from how peaceful are their parents. When they find that the mother and the father are peaceful, they gain so much confidence that they feel they can conquer the world, they can conquer any problems. There is peace. There's always mother. There's always father. Anything that I want, I can go to them. They're so happy together. They're so peaceful together. So what is that? I don't need anything else in my life. I can succeed in everything that I do. And I can pour my heart out to my parents and they'll be willing to accept it. And this, once again, the credit goes to my wife, because my children's first go-to person is my wife, not me. They will treat me as their schoolmate, classmate. They'll come to me when they want to share fun, they want to joke around, and they want somebody to cheer them up and things like that. But when they have a problem, they will go to her first. They will go and pour their heart out to her. And she will patiently sit through all those hours of discussion and sit down and understand their problem and solve their problems. And she would often tell me that the children derives so much of confidence, and it is so important that she and I are peaceful at all times. I totally agree with her.
Wonderful answer. Next, what are the characteristics of peace education? What are the characteristics
of peace education? You can't teach peace to anyone. You can't educate a human being to be peaceful. I believe that you can only set an example. In fact, you can only preach through your actions. If you are peaceful, and if you maintain peace around you, people will then relate to you and learn from you the path of peace. But if you are not peaceful and you are only preaching peace, they will come to mind. They will say, yeah, this fellow will talk all kinds of philosophy. He himself doesn't follow any of what he is talking about. Why should I even take him very seriously? So for instance, if I tell my children, do your exercises, you will maintain peace. And if I don't wake up and do exercises, how long it will take for my son to turn around and ask me, Appa, Sumar, don't talk like this. You yourself don't do exercises. Why are you preaching me? So I don't even preach to my children. I don't ask them whether they have done their exercises or not. I have no interest in doing so. I realized this mistake of mine long back, many years ago, when we did homeschooling. My two daughters are homeschooled. My son also partly homeschooled. The 11th and 12th standard, he wrote sitting at home. He didn't go to school at all. So during the homeschooling days, my children became my teachers. I became a not so very obedient student of them, not the other way around. And I realized teaching is a very violent word. It is indeed violence, because you are going against nature. You are forcing knowledge onto somebody's head when they probably don't want to learn it from you. Children will pick up. Children pick up language. How do they pick up language? A two-year-old child, a three-year-old child, learns to speak his mother tongue naturally. Who taught him ABCD? Who taught him IIE? Who taught him how to speak? Who taught him the vocabulary? Nothing. They will just mimic you. They will hear you and they will reproduce. They will mimic. And that's how they learn. Same way, they will learn peace. If you choose peace every day, if you remain peaceful every day, and you act peaceful every day, and every word of yours that you utter is soaked in peace, then peace spreads all around you, and children will learn through that. I believe you cannot teach these things. You can only set an example. You have to lead by example. Like Swamiji did.
Thank you, sir. Excellent answer. Next, what is the foundation value of a relationship in family?
Ma'am, you should become old enough to understand this, they say. I have seen in many families, when the man becomes old, the father becomes a grandfather, great-grandfather, and they become old, they chase him out of the family. They say, no, it's very difficult to keep you in the family. Please go away. And the family suffers. The old man suffers because he is sitting in some kind of a foster care home or some kind of a paid home or old age home or whatever it is. And he suffers. I have seen in my own relative's case these kind of incidents that are happening. But now I live in a joint family and I'm seeing how tough it is to live as an old human being. Your body doesn't cooperate with you. Your mind doesn't cooperate with you. Your diseases are always threatening you. You are dependent on other people. You are dependent on medication sometimes to even breathe properly. Oftentimes, you have to go to a doctor and you can't just do your household work like you are used to doing. Your bones become weak. You can't just walk around like you did. You can't do your exercises that regularly. I'm talking once you cross 70, 80. Now, that is when one turns around and say, my God, I wish I have treated my children better. I wish I had taken care of my children better. I wish I had been their friends. Isn't that too old for you to realize the importance of relationship and relationship value in a family? You are not alone. I'm not alone. My food today got prepared by a whole lot of people. Okay, and my clothes today were woven and given to me by a whole lot of people. The materials that I used, the material that I'm using now to go on a live show with you talking, is also prepared by thousands of people. So you can never be alone. Everybody, every human being is important. Everybody is working hard for everyone else. It's like the tree and the leaves, and the root and the leaves of a tree. The deepest root in the tallest tree has to work for the last leaf in the tallest tree. The last leaf in the tallest tree must work for the deepest root in the tree. Both has to work. They have to produce chlorophyll. This has to send water there, right? Without which the tree cannot sustain itself. And this is symbiotic relationship. It is not dependency, but it is interdependency. So the moment you realize that I am dependent on you and you are dependent on me, you will realize the value of relationship in every single human being that crosses your path in your life.
Thank you, sir. Very beautiful example, sir. Thank you. Next question. How to spend quality time with my child?
Very simple. What does this child enjoy doing? Do that. Even if it means 10 minutes, it's worth spending that 10 minutes time with that child. My grandson, who is 1 year old now, somehow has this equation in his brain, his growing brain already. Murli Tata means Tata bye bye. He will carry him around. So the moment he sees me early in the morning, 6 o'clock, he'll come out of his room. I'll be maybe doing my exercises or meditation at that time. This fellow will see me from far. He doesn't know how to speak words. But then he will say, Ta, Pa, some word will come, some sound will come out of his mouth. And I have to look at him. If I doesn't look at him, then the volume will increase. Somehow he has to grab my attention. And he has to look at me and I have to carry him. And I have to take him out. I'm telling you, I will spend maybe 10 minutes with him twice a day or three times a day. I would carry him out and come back. But the joy that he gets out of that and the joy that I get out of it is so immense. And he's so peaceful for the 10, 15 minutes that I spend with him. That's all he's interested in. I mean, in a day, he probably sleeps for about 10, 12 hours. So the 10, 12 hours that he's awake, I spend him like 10 minutes, 12 minutes. But the 12 minutes is so fulfilling for me, and I'm hoping it is enough for him. I've seen this with my children and my sister's children also who grew up with me. I've seen that when they were young, they had all become old now. And all my three children are married and my daughter is already having a grandson. But these children, when they grow up, I would be a storyteller for them. And they will come to me to listen to creative stories. My stories don't normally repeat. The same story also, if you say it the second time, I will attempt to say something interesting. It has to be interesting for me. I don't want to keep repeating the same story. My wife is not like that. My wife is working so hard. And children go and ask story to my wife. My wife had one favorite story. I'm sorry, I'm slightly digressing here. My wife will tell one story. One story is like, well, there was a crow in a forest. And the crow was bored. It then went to its mother and said, Amma, Amma, I am bored. Tell me a story. The mother crow started telling a story. The story was, there once was a crow in the forest. And that crow was bored. It went to its mother and said, Amma, Amma, I am bored. Tell me a story. And the mother crow sat down and said, okay, I'll tell you a story. And the story went like this. Same thing. Went on and on and on and on. So 5 minutes into this infinite loop of listening to the same sentences repeat itself, I will stop her and say, stop it. I can't handle this. This is just drilling into my head. Let me start telling a good story, interesting story. So I will tell a story about how moon came. I'll tell a story about how children needs to be brave. Something. I'll keep telling something or the other. You know, I'll tell all kinds of stories. I've said my stories are quite famous with my children. And again, these were not like hours and hours of storytelling. Maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. We'll sing songs. We'll sometimes dance together. Sometimes we'll... You know what happened? My children are homeschooled, I told you, right? And my last daughter was, I think, 8 years old when she started homeschooling. Too young a age. So in my attempt to teach them languages, I would take Tamil books. Aathichuvadi, ABCD, all that, IE, all that. I would sit and teach them. My children would listen to it and say, "Appa, this is boring. Pa. How you mean to say this is how teachers teach Tamil in schools? You never want to go to school. This is not the school that I want to attend. I will play and I will learn something." That opened my eyes and said, "My hold on. How do you want to learn the language?" They say, "Look, we learn to speak in Tamil without reading anything in Tamil. Now, why don't you teach us similarly?" Then I thought, okay, throw the whole thing away. And I took Tuppariyum Sambu book. I don't know if you've read that book. It's a very famous, it's like, it's a comic detective, you know, who makes, it's like Peter Sellers' Pink Panther type of movies. It's a story that wherein he makes a lot of mistakes and yet he ends up discovering who the thief is or who the killer is, and it becomes a whole lot of series of comedy things. And I picked up that book and I started reading that book. And then they stopped me and said, "No, look, this Tamil, brilliant Tamil, it's an old Tamil, right? It's a 1960s Tamil. And the Tamil was difficult for them to understand." They said, "No, stop it. Tell it as if you are telling story, not how it is written in that book." So I would read it very fast, and while I'm reading, I will tell it in my language, in children's language, the way they will understand. That's how my children learn Tamil. Do you believe that? That's how my children learn Tamil. So what do they like? What is their interest? What do they enjoy? And how do they relate to you? And what do they expect from you? What will give them peace? What will give them confidence and self-esteem? Spend a few minutes on that. That's enough. The idea is not to teach them anything. Idea is not to make them correct. The idea, for instance, my children taught me this important lesson. When I asked them, told them that you have to learn spellings, you have to learn grammar. They said, "Papa, do you know the spelling of all the words in the dictionary?" "Obviously, I don't." "Is there any human being who knows the spelling of all the words in dictionary?" "Perhaps not. So why are you forcing me to read the, memorize the whole dictionary? It's not important. Teach me how to use the dictionary." Wow. What a beautiful lesson that I learned from my children. So I have only attempted to show them how to use problem-solving skills and not really solve their problems. That's all they require. They just need help to go and use proper tools. My children never studied grammar, but they are much better in grammar than I am. They are much better in spellings than I am. When I do English crossword every morning in Deccan Herald in Bangalore, my daughter, I will ask them. There are certain things my daughter is so good because she has read so many books. So I will ask her, especially mythology books. You know, Greek goddess. I never studied Greek goddess. Anything to do with Greek and goddess and mythology, I'll ask Aditi, "Can you please tell me what is the name of this goddess?" And she will know. She will know. I know she knows. I don't know when she studied. I don't know where she studied. I don't know how she picked up these words. She will know. That's enough. She knows how to read a book. When she wants to read, she will read. It doesn't matter whether she reads or not. She knows how to read a book. That is enough. That's all that we need to worry about. She knows how to refer to a dictionary. That's enough. When there is a need for her to improve her spelling or grammar, she will know how to do it. It is not important that she knows spellings and grammars today. That, in my opinion, is spending quality time with children.
Very interesting, sir. Very joking and very interesting, sir. Next question. What are your husband's responsibilities?
Oh boy. I'm not sure I'm even qualified to answer this question. But anyway, I believe that there are certain things that I take up. There is no husband list of responsibilities. It's foolish to actually list A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H as the responsibilities of a husband. As a member of the family, I think the first and foremost is to acknowledge, at least in my mind, I have acknowledged this many times openly, publicly, in front of my wife, that my wife is wiser and more intelligent, patient human being than I am. So I have to give it to her, certainly. Number one. And number two is I have the responsibility to treat her fairly when nobody is watching me. I have to treat her in my mind when nobody is watching me. I shouldn't be treating her in a menial fashion in my mind secretly and, you know, graciously in front of others just to act as if I'm giving her respect. And that doesn't work for long. It will come out somewhere, but I'll say something and it will come out in the open and that will make me realize my foolishness of trying to camouflage my lack of respect for her. So I have to genuinely, in the deepest of my heart, show respect and have respect. When I have respect, it'll show up in my behavior. Okay. So the genuineness of showing respect to my wife must be quite sincere and quite authentic in its nature. Not that I'm doing a great job of it. Many times I fail and I learn my lesson. I must be honest and truthful about my behavior in this case. But I'm much better than what I was, say, 30 years ago when I got married. This training is not given to me, you see. So I have to learn. I have to falter and I have to learn. So the third responsibility I believe I have is that I have equal responsibility of everything that goes on in my family. This also is something that I've learned from my wife. I used to think that my responsibility is just to go out and earn money and come back. Then I realized there was a particular year, not so back, just a few years ago, my wife earned crores of rupees more than what I earned. Okay, that taught me to be humble. This girl is a lot more capable than I am. It's just that planetary movements and her luck and her health and everything else should align with her properly and she will be a lot more successful than I am. So if you remove that I need to earn money, but then she can also earn money, much more money than I am, then what is my responsibility? It's foolishness to say my responsibility is only to earn money. No. Whatever that needs to be done at that point of time, whoever is the best person to do it, just take it up, do it, finish it, khatam, move on to the next step. Sometimes I'm not capable of doing it. For instance, there could be one member in the family with whom I may not be able to communicate effectively. So then I have a responsibility to seek help. Okay, my daughter taught me how to speak in a way that is not hurtful for others. It's just non-violent communication. She would run a few exercises. I remember a few exercises that she ran it by us. And I remember how we put a lot of emotions in our words and not state facts. Okay. For instance, my wife said something to me. I got hurt. The way to communicate with her is, Amma, you said this to me and I feel hurt. In an unemotional way, is non-violent communication. Instead of that, you said this to me. Why did you say this to me? This is not the way you should talk to me. This is emotion. This is violent communication. Again, this is challenging. Not easy. We make mistakes and we learn. Okay? So, maintaining peace in every action, in words, thoughts and deeds is also a huge responsibility of me or of any person, in fact, need to understand that and I need to appreciate that and I need to stand by that. I need to accept that it is a part of my responsibility. Cleanliness, another huge responsibility for a husband. I underline it twice, thrice, three times because it's not in our DNA. See, look, somehow Brahma, when he created men, he forgot that one gene of cleanliness. He doesn't understand cleanliness that much. There are some exceptional husbands, but many husbands don't understand how to keep a house clean. They will walk on barefoot over the bed. Even yesterday, last night, I got scolded by my wife. I genuinely forgot. This is not in my head. What can I do about it? Okay. I just simply walked, trampled over the bed, and then she said, "You are walking with your bare foot on my bed because we sleep on the floor, you see." So we put the bed and I was walking over the bed. I had washed my leg, all right, but still the concept of cleanliness for us doesn't exist, but it is naturally there for a woman. She understands how to remain hygienic, how to remain clean. Most of the women. Again, there are some exceptional women, but in exceptional men, only the consciousness of cleanliness is there. Okay. Every work in the house, I would like to put this as one of the responsibility. Every job in the house is equally accountable, responsible for a man as well as a woman. A wife and the husband both share all responsibilities in the family. Nobody is inferior, nobody is superior. It's not like you are expected to do and I'm not expected to do. Can you do? You can't do? Don't worry, I will do. I can't do, can you do? Please. It's a good conversation to have. You don't set very high expectation that I should do this, you should do this. Then there is a problem. Okay. Again, there is a lot of assumptions that I have and I make mistakes and I just assume it is my wife's responsibility and then I fail and then I learn. So this responsibility must also go with accountability of the behavior. I can't assume authority in the family without taking responsibility. Okay. My wife has authorized me to go and do certain things. Okay? But that comes with responsibility. See, I have to take responsibility for my actions. I have to be accountable for my actions. I should say, I cannot run away from the consequences of my behaviors. I make a mistake, I must apologize, I must sit and repent, think through, and I must change myself. That's my accountability. If I don't do that, then I have not done justice to being a disciple of Swamiji, or I have not done justice to being a good student in this beautiful university called the family.
Thank you, sir. Very good explanation. Next question. How does economic inequality affect family?
I cannot answer this question because we don't have inequality in the family. My wife is capable of earning more than I do. And from day one, she has put a very simple rule in my family that I should not question how much money she should spend. I have not been honest to truth. I should tell you that I have not been quite compliant to this request of hers before she was married to me. Many times I have pointed finger at her, said, "You have spent more money, you have lost this money." And I feel guilty of it even today. I look back and I said, "Why did I so say such words?" And she has earned a lot of money. She is an M.Tech in IIT Delhi. She's a gold medalist. I'm just a BE from Madras University and barely passed. She's a gold medalist from Masters in Technology. She ran a successful architecture company and she earned a lot more money than I did in a very short period of time. And she continues to manage everything in the house. She doesn't give up anything in the family. Just because she's running a business doesn't mean that she will give up taking care of the family. She took care of my mother. The list is huge. The list is just huge. So, but I have seen families where husband will say, whatever the wife, I know one relative of mine whose husband takes account of every rupee that the wife brings home. It belongs to him. He may earn money, he may not earn money. He will spend money on cigarettes, he will spend money on drinking. Nobody can question. But if this lady goes out for a walk and then buy some vegetable, come back, she has to bring bill. And this man will sit in the night and write down in a notebook how much money got spent by her. But he will take a chunk of money and he will go and spend on drinking, or he will spend on cigarettes, or he will spend on some wasteful expenditure. nobody should question him. It becomes a big issue. I've seen things like this, and I've always felt very sad for such families. I know another family where every single jewel of the wife is locked in a locker, and the locker key with the husband. Every silk sari is locked in. Every precious metal, every precious item is locked in. Every bank passbook is locked in. Every rupee is locked in. So if the husband, if the wife wants some money, if let's say son comes and says, Amma, you said need 50 rupees pocket money, then the wife has to go and beg for the 50 rupees to the husband. Husband will say, why do you need it? What do you need it for? What is the purpose? Why does your son need 50 rupees? What is he going to do with 50 rupees? You have to justify everything to him. Okay? That's the way it is. Very, very sad when women are not given financial freedom. Every woman has the right to earn and spend the money that she wants in the way she wants it. When you give that freedom, you will see that most women don't like to spend like men do. They will spend it wisely, and they will save money for the family, and that savings will save the family itself. That's my experience.
Thank you. Next question. What causes conflict between siblings?
What sibling causes rivalry?
Yes.
Yeah, the sibling rivalry is a very interesting subject. I've seen there are expectations. Expectations on themselves. And because of which, children sometimes grow up thinking they are inferior to the other siblings. We know that's not true. And we love all our children equally. But still, one child may grow up feeling inferior to the other children. Usually, the last child will feel inferior, or the middle child will feel inferior, or the older children. The oldest children will normally not feel inferior unless they have some faculty problem or some weakness, some handicap or some other issue that they have. Generally, the oldest in the family will always feel very superior in the family. The youngest or the middle one will feel inferior in the family. I grew up in a family where my younger sister and my older sister were brilliant people, truly brilliant. My elder sister was a gold medalist in mathematics. My younger sister, even at this age, she's crossed 50, and she did her MBA and got her MBA degree very recently. Okay, after doing MS in the United States, she is a naturalized citizen, a green card holder in the United States. Absolutely brilliant. Okay. And I'm an average student. Up to school, I was a brilliant student. But once I gone to college, I lost my way, and then I met Swamiji and came back and passed my exams and somehow survived in my life. I have application of knowledge. And so with that, with my ability to speak and present and things like that, I somehow survived, and I'm today where I am. But these two people were absolutely brilliant. So at one point of time, I used to think that I was inferior to them. I'm not good enough. You know, my father doesn't love me that much. My mother doesn't love me that much. Other people will always identify me as a brother of my akka. My younger sister also had the problem. She studied in the same college, same school as my eldest sister. Okay, and she would always be identified as a sister of Revati. So why everybody is calling me a sister of Revati? I have my own name. Why can't she call me? So she rebelled against it, and she wanted to become successful, and she became successful, okay, which is a great thing. So this comparison in a child's mind is sometimes unavoidable, and that in an unavoidable state, the children become rivals to each other. So either the child has to bring up one's own self-esteem to feel good. Every child is special, okay? Every child feels good about themselves in some way or the other. They deserve to feel good. They deserve to be treated well. They deserve all the successes that they deserve in their life. So nobody needs to feel inferior. Nobody, therefore, needs to feel the other person as a rival. So either the child has to feel themselves through some way, they have to climb up the ladder and come up in the ladder of self-esteem, or the elders in the family should give them self-esteem, not just give pep talk, but actually show them in a better light. Give them examples of how they solve their problems themselves and how they are unique in their own way, how enterprising they are, how capable they are with their own hands, how capable they are with their own intellect and intelligence and their own brain. So when you keep giving them positive image of themselves, then this rivalry will go away.
Very good answer. Thank you. What are the causes of family conflicts?
I think we've already spoken about it. A whole list of things are there. But underlying all the conflicts, all of it, is only one reason. Expectations. If there are no expectations, there are no disappointments. Yeah. If there are no disappointments, there are no conflicts at all in the family. Expectation can be of multiple dimensions. Why could be one dimension? Okay, I want to see a movie. My wife will say, why do you want to see a movie? Fight will start. Conflict will start. This is one. Second thing is, time conflict. When conflict. Okay, you want to see a movie? I also want to see a movie, but not today. Tomorrow let us watch. No, I will watch only today. Second type of conflict. Third type of conflict is how much. I will say, okay, let us watch for another about 4 hours, 3 hours long movie. We will watch Bahubali 2, we will watch. My wife will say, it's a three and a half hours movie. Yeah, we have to go to bed. It's already 9 o'clock in the evening today. Let's go to bed and watch it a little less today. So conflict is, why? I will want to watch the full movie today. Okay. And then the method of watching. So I'll say, okay, let us set the computer up and let's have a bigger screen, or let's put the TV on, let's watch. My wife will say, no, mobile phone is enough. You're going to lie down and watch. You're going to be in the bed. Okay. Why do you want to set up the whole thing house and then you have to switch off, have to keep everything away? Or you go to the hall and watch. And there's a television set there. Now, we don't have television set in my family. My father has one in his room. My wife, my mother-in-law has one. But we don't watch. In fact, my father's television connection got cut because some monkey issue came in the family and in the building that we are staying here, and we pulled the cable out and the cable stopped working, and the building is not allowing anybody to come in to repair that because of this COVID-19 problem. So last 4 months, my father is not even watched TV. Okay. My mother-in-law watches once in a while, small dose, half an hour, 1 hour, she will go to bed. Okay. We don't go and sit and watch this television. My children also don't have a habit of watching television. We don't have a habit of watching television at all in the family. But supposing, let us say, I want to watch. Okay. Then that is a method conflict, how conflict. And that also will lead to complications in the family. So these 4 or 5 different dimensions of conflicts, if you need to avoid, first to get rid of that expectation. Where is the need for you to expect that your wife should sit and watch TV or watch a movie? Why should you have an expectation of yourself that you should sit and watch a movie at this point of time? Even read a book, you can do something else. You want to be entertained, you want to have quality time, fair enough. There are 100 ways of doing it. So once you protect your interest and get rid of your expectation, so the difference between the two, if you understand the difference, I'm hungry, I want to eat, is a need, that's an interest, a good need, good interest, nothing wrong in that. But I want to have only this type of food, I want to have it today, I want to have it at this time, I want it to be served on a silver plate, I want it to be given a silver spoon, somebody has to feed me, this is too much of expectation, correct? So drop all those expectations, conflicts will go away.
Next question, explain the role of an individual in maintaining family peace. Yes.
Every member, every individual is a member of an integrated family. The whole is stronger than the individuals in the family. The COVID-19 has proved it in our own family. Okay, we have so many earning members in the family because we were all attempting to earn on our own effort. We are able to swim through these difficult times. Otherwise, this whole family would have collapsed a long back. We could not pay rent for 3 months. We were not able to touch the car even today. The car is not even starting because we don't have money to put diesel and take it for repair and service. It's going to cost some 40,000 to 50,000 rupees. It's a lot of money today in today's conditions, in COVID-19 conditions. It is impossible for me to even comprehend how we have survived the last 5-6 months without each member of the family. My youngest daughter is running a sweet shop. She's making sweets and she's selling it. It's something that she just took it up because she wanted to do something to keep herself engaged, but also because there was a need for her to earn money and the family needed to earn money. My middle daughter started teaching in a university and worked on building curriculum for them. And that gave us some money. And she's spending the rent for the family for that. My son working, really working so many hours. He wakes up early and works till around 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the night sometimes. Goes early in the morning to the kitchen. We run a community kitchen to cook and serve people. There's some 100 people who are eating from our kitchen. We started a kitchen in this time. We took permission from the police. I can go on and on and on. So I'm realizing that no individual is alone in a family and no individual is less important or more important than the family. From time to time, people take roles. It's like 10 people sitting and rowing a boat. Okay? In a race, you're in a race, you're rowing a boat. Sometimes your arms feel tired and you go a little slow. But while you're going a little slow, other people row faster than you. And the boat keeps going and the team wins. That's why I love this definition for the word team. Together, everyone achieves more. You're not alone in this world.
Thank you, sir. Very good explanation. Thank you. Next last question, sir. How to solve the emotional problems with the family friends?
Family friends will have problems. Family will have problems. Members will have problems. Other human beings will have problems. Who doesn't have problems? Everybody has problems. And some of these problems will affect the family in a negative way. But if the family is united together, then somebody within the family will be able to help that relative or help that friend overcome the negative emotion. Sometimes it is difficult immediately. But time will certainly heal when the family is united and everybody's mental frequencies are aligned towards maintaining peace within the family. External pressures, such as the emotional disturbance caused by a relative or a person from outside the family, will have no direct negative bearing on the family. Family will survive such pressures simply because they love each other. And they want peace. And they're working hard to maintain peace, not only within themselves, but within the family and within the society. Peace is therefore a choice and the driving factor for achieving everything together as a family.
Thank you, sir. Be blessed by the wind. Really interesting for the session. So
thank you so much, Professor Jayanti. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being there.
Very interesting your answers and joking and very good examples for me. It's very interesting for this session. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lots of thank you.
Thank you very much for being there. Thank you very much for being a great source of inspiration, asking me a wonderful set of questions. Thank you all. Thank you all of you for being there and being continuous, providing continuous support and inspiration for us to do these regular live shows during these difficult COVID-19 times. And be there, be safe, and continue to do what you need to do to protect yourself. And don't forget, meditate, introspect, do your Kayakalpa yoga, and continue to remain peaceful and happy in your life and spread peace wherever you go. Thank you very much for being there. Be blessed by the divine. I'll see you in the next live show. Warrior Kavalamba.